So last week, I started to talk about the advantages of the altruistic intention. Okay, you remember? Do you remember? What were some of the advantages? Hello? What were some of
the things you want?
Okay. Yeah. All of our wholesome wishes will occur. What other benefits? Yeah. What were other benefits? Yeah, we become an object of respect and offering because of the altruism in the mind. What other benefits? Well, we become a child of the Buddha, so we're following in the footsteps of the Buddha, growing up to become like a Buddha. What else?
Clairvoyance.
Yeah, sometimes you can get other extrasensory perceptions like clairvoyance, so on different realizations. Yeah?
Obstacles created by our negative karma is eliminated very quickly.
Yeah, okay. So we're able to purify our negative karma very quickly because the altruism totally opposes the negative emotions with which we acted in harmful ways. What else?
Become a source of comfort and happiness for all sentient
beings. Yeah. Become a source of comfort and happiness for all sentient beings. What else?
Create merit or positive potential.
Yeah, we create a lot of positive potential. Because we're working for all the sentient beings. Okay? So, you know, it's important that you remember these and that you contemplate them. Okay? It's important when you come here, you know, that you jot down some notes during the teaching, or even if you don't want to jot down notes during the teaching, after the teaching, when you go home, you write down the major points. Okay? And that you contemplate these things. Because the teaching is what gives you the information. That's the first step. But then you need to take it and contemplate it and digest it and make it part of yourself. Otherwise, it just remains on the level of words. And when you come the next week, it's like you're starting all over again because you don't even remember what the topic was the previous week. So it's real important that during the week you work with this material and that before you come to the class, you review it and so that you know what page we're on, okay? And you know where we are and kind of where we left off because these teachings develop in a gradual way and each subsequent point is based on a previous one. So, you know, please review the previous ones. In the teachings, they often describe to us how to listen to the teachings. And I think this is something that's very important. You may remember when I was here in February, I talked about that. Yeah. Do you remember the three kinds of pots, the analogy of how to listen to the teachings?
The pot with the hole in the bottom.
Yeah, okay. So what's the pot with the hole in the bottom?
But they just go in one ear and out the other and you forget them.
Yep, that's it. So it's very easy for us to be a pot with the hole in the bottom, isn't it? Yeah. Or worse yet, we're an upside down pot when we're in the class and the teachings don't go in because our mind is, you know, spinning around something else altogether. Okay? So it's important not to be an upside down pot. You know, let the teachings in when you're here. It's important not to be a pot with the hole in the bottom, you know, in one ear and out the other. And then also the third analogy, do you remember what that one was?
The pot with dirt in it.
Yeah, the dirty pot. And that's the person who listens to teaching and with the wrong motivation. And they're all full of their own ideas and ready to argue at any point, so they're not really taking the teachings in and considering them, or doing so with a pure motivation. Okay, so it's important when we listen to teachings to pay attention, to remember them, and then to listen with a good motivation. Yeah. Okay. And I find that I usually have to remind groups that the responsibility of the teaching does not lie on the teacher. Okay? This is a co-created thing. And so each audience brings something out of the teacher in a different way. Yeah? And so according to how the audience practices, then, you know, they receive different teachings because they bring different things out of the teacher. So, you know, it's a co-created thing. The students are as responsible as anybody else because, after all, it's for the benefit of the students that the teachings are happening. It's not so that I can listen to myself talk. I listen to myself talk too much. So the benefits are for the students, and so it's important that you really take the benefit and take it to heart and think about the teachings, okay? So a few other advantages of bodhicitta. Remember, you know, bodhicitta is this primary mind with two aspirations. The first one, to work for the welfare of others, and the second, aspiring to become a Buddha in order to do that most effectively. Okay, so you need those two different aspirations. So compassion alone is not bodhicitta. Okay? And love alone isn't bodhicitta. And wanting to work for the welfare of all beings alone is not bodhicitta. There also has to be this intention to become a Buddha in order to do that. Okay? So it's this motivating force that pushes us along the path. And they say that the bodhicitta, the altruistic intention, is valuable at the beginning, the middle, and the end of the path. Okay? So it's valuable at the beginning because it gets us going. Okay? You know, it shows us our potential of becoming a fully enlightened being, our potential of being able to care for others in an equal-minded way. You know, it gives us some vision of our qualities and what we can develop. So it gets us energized. And we also see at the beginning of the path that so much of the goodness we experience in our life comes from bodhicitta. Okay? I mean, how do we know? We experience a lot of happiness in our life. That comes as a result of our own positive actions. We learn how to create positive actions because others taught us, and those who taught us usually have a good motivation, you know, and they learn because of the Buddha's teachings to start with, you know, and the whole reason why the Buddha's the Buddha is because of bodhicitta. So, you know, if we look even our own virtuous actions, we can see that they depend upon this altruistic intention in the mind of a Buddha and all the myriad effects that come from that. Okay, so at the beginning of the path, we really begin to see how, you know, even our ordinary happiness in our lives ultimately derives from, you know, this altruistic intention in the minds of other beings. Bodhicitta is valuable in the middle of the path because it keeps us going. Yeah, we start out in the path with a lot of energy, and because we're inspired by the vision the bodhicitta offers us at the beginning. And then sometimes when we're in the middle of practicing, things don't go the way our ego wants them to go. You know, we're trying to help all these sentient beings and they tell us to mind our own business. You know, or we're trying to help all these sentient beings and it turns out a mess. Or we help somebody and then they're ungrateful and they criticize us. Okay, that happens a lot, doesn't it? You know, so in the face of all these kinds of obstacles, you know, the remembering the bodhicitta helps us overcome the obstacles, be they the obstacles in the environment, like other people, you know, not being receptive, or other people blaming us for things we didn't do, or the bodhicitta helps us, and it helps us overcome the obstacles in our own mind. For example, expecting that people should appreciate us because we're working for their benefit, and expecting that they should say thank you and your advice is so wise and please give me more, you know, and show it. You know, so when we think of the bodhicitta, we see that often we have agendas in our mind, and we need to really come back to a compassionate attitude instead of pushing our agendas on other people. Okay? So bodhicitta helps us have a mind that's more resilient and that's able to handle difficulties, because for sure, when you're working for the benefit of sentient beings, you're going to have problems. Even if you don't work for the benefit of sentient beings, you're going to have problems. It's true, isn't it? You know? And if you look at His Holiness the Dalai Lama, I mean, he has more problems than any of us would ever have. Are you the leader in exile of a people who's been in exile for 40 years? I mean, talk about having problems. Yeah? Would you want to have to lead an exile community? Would you want to have to negotiate with the Beijing government? Would you want to have to keep a group of people unified? You know? Talk about problems and difficulties. He has many more than we do. And you can see that his compassion, his altruism, is what keeps him balanced, you know, and capable of dealing with all of this. Okay, so the bodhicitta helps us in the middle of the path to keep going and keep our positive intention. It helps us at the end of the path, because when we've actually attained Buddhahood, when we actually are enlightened, then spontaneously, effortlessly, you know, the energy flows to be of the greatest benefit to others. And I think that's one of the great qualities of a Buddha, is a Buddha doesn't have to sit there and go, okay, so, you know, so-and-so has a problem. What in the world am I going to do to solve this, you know? Or so-and-so has a problem. And this guy, last time I helped him, was such a jerk. You know, I really don't know if I want to bother about this sentient being this time, you know. There's others who, you know. Okay, so a Buddha doesn't have to go through that. You know, or a Buddha, when they see somebody, you know, who has a problem or suffering, doesn't go, oh yeah, that, you know, that guy really has a very bad problem, but it's Sunday today and I want to rest. I've had a really hard week, you know, working for the benefit of sentient beings. I want a day off. You know, a Buddha doesn't think like that. Okay. So you can see that when we attain enlightenment, then automatically, spontaneously, without having to consider it, the wish and the ability to be of the greatest benefit comes. So there's no hesitation, there's no laziness, there's no fear or reluctance or anxiety, you know, involved. There's just this pure wish to help. And then also, because the Buddha has, you know, these clairvoyant powers, they're able to see the different karmic propensities of different sentient beings and benefit them according to, you know, what's going to be most effective. And you can see that's a great blessing, because many times we want to benefit people and we don't know the best way to do it, do we? Yeah? So it's hard to say sometimes. Whereas, you know, when you become a Buddha and the mind's fully omniscient, then, you know, this kind of appears to the mind spontaneously. There's not these kind of, you know, difficulties. Okay? So that's why bodhicitta is good at the beginning, middle, and end of the path. Bodhicitta is also our real friend. Yeah? If you're ever lonely, look for the friend of bodhicitta. Yeah, what do we usually do when we're lonely? What do you do when you're lonely? Go take refuge. Our usual three refuges? The refrigerator, the TV, and the shopping center. You know, when you're lonely, what do you do? What do you do? What do you take refuge in?
Microwave popcorn.
Okay. Does the microwave popcorn fill the hole in your heart? No, it fills our stomach. It makes our belly expand. But it doesn't, you know, when we're lonely, there's this feeling of emptiness in the heart. Does the popcorn fill it? No. Now, when you're lonely and you plop yourself down in front of the tube, okay, and you're doing your channel surfing, does that fill the emptiness in the heart? No. You know, when you go to the shopping center and buy something that you don't need and can't afford, or even if you need it and can afford it, does it fill the emptiness in the heart? It doesn't, does it? You know? So when we're lonely, we use totally the wrong strategies to deal with our loneliness. You know? We make ourselves fat, bored, and broke. And we're still lonely. So, you know, whereas bodhicitta is a real friend, you know. If when we're lonely, we sit down and we do the meditations on bodhicitta and we reflect on the kindness of sentient beings and we reflect on everything that they've done for us throughout this life and throughout all of our beginningless previous lives, and we reflect on how everything we have and do and are, you know, are, is dependent on others and what they've done for us, then this feeling of connection automatically comes in the heart, doesn't it? You know, and when there's this feeling of connection with sentient beings, we aren't lonely anymore. Yeah. Because often when we're lonely, we're so involved in spinning around me, aren't we? Do you notice that? Oh, I'm so lonely. Nobody loves me. Nobody cares about me. Poor me, poor me, poor me, poor me, poor me. We do our mala of poor me. And then we do a mala of nobody loves me, nobody loves me, nobody loves me. Okay. But, you know, so that way of thinking makes us more lonely, doesn't it? Because we're concentrated with single point intention on how lonely we are. So of course we make ourselves more lonely. Yeah. And that loneliness gets created, you know, and amplified in the mind and just accelerated. Whereas if we do the meditations on bodhicitta and we start, you know, meditating on equanimity or the kindness of others, or we do the metta meditation, generating love for others, or we do taking and giving, you know, any of the bodhicitta meditations, then automatically our heart is open and expanded towards others. You know? And so that's the direct opposite of the feeling of loneliness, isn't it? Okay? So bodhicitta becomes our real friend. It's the thing that really conquers our loneliness. Now the thing is that sometimes we're really silly, and so, you know, we feel lonely, and then we say, oh, bodhicitta, you know, is supposed to conquer my loneliness. So, okay, Buddha, you have bodhicitta. Do something with my loneliness. Make it go away. You know, as if Buddha's going to, you know, take out his magic wand and go, doing, you know. I mean, wouldn't that be nice? But, you know, Buddha doesn't have a magic wand. Buddha's magic wand is the teachings on bodhicitta, which we've received. So then it's time for us to contemplate them and integrate them in our own heart. Okay, bodhicitta is a way for us to make our lives meaningful. And I think in modern day America, having a meaningful life is something people are really struggling with. No, because we're given this image of success and meaning, and a lot of people have it and they're still unhappy. You know, meaning is supposed, you know, you're supposed to be rich and famous and high power. But, you know, people are rich and famous and high power and they're not necessarily happy. Witness the ex-mayor of Boise. Yeah. Very good example, isn't it? You know? So those kinds of things are not necessarily a mark of success or a mark of having a meaningful life. Can have all of that and actually wind up quite miserable. I think the ex-mayor is probably really miserable right now. Yeah. So, you know, I think it's time, especially in this country, for us to really ask ourselves, what makes our life meaningful? Okay? What is something valuable? You know, when we come to the time of dying, what do we want to look back on our life and feel good about? Yeah? When we're dying, you know, do we want to look back and say, I was rich and powerful and famous? But now, you know, when you die, being rich and powerful and famous doesn't mean beans, does it? You know, because it doesn't matter whether you die in this luxurious hospital bed or you die in the gutter, you know, in Calcutta. Because when you're dying, none of it makes, you know, what good is your, you know, plush hospital bed gonna do for you? And especially when they're playing the TV, you're trying to die, and you know they have Star Wars on the TV, you know. And so, you know, to really think about, well, what is it that's gonna make our life meaningful? You know, when we look back on our life, yeah. And here we see that it's not just what we do. You know, in terms of being busy doing stuff all day. It's not just in terms of what we have, you know, because you have a whole house full of stuff, but when you die, none of it comes with. You know, the ancient Egyptians, and you know, put a lot of it in the tomb, and it's still here. It didn't go with Tutankhamun to his next life, you know. It's still here, and it sits in museums, you know. And I don't know if our stuff is nice enough to put in museums. You know, it's probably mostly going to go to the Goodwill. So it's just accumulating stuff, what we're going to feel good about in our life at the end. You know, I don't think so. So, you know, I think what we really feel good about in our lives, if we just contemplate a little bit, it's the way in which we've been able to connect with other people and the way in which in our hearts we have open hearts. Yeah? Because it's not the external relationship that's the connection so much. It's the feeling in our hearts of being connected. Because we can have external relationships with a lot of people but not feel connected to them. And we can be very far away from other people but feel very connected with them. Okay? I mean, when we see certain images from Iraq, do you feel connected with those people there? Yeah? Okay, we don't know them. They're total strangers. But when there's a feeling of compassion in our heart for them, we're connected, even though we don't know them. Should we meet them one day, it's even nicer. We'll be able to, you know, really connect with them. But even if we don't, the feeling of connection is there, and you know, and I think they feel that too, because we all know if we flip the situation, we may be far away from somebody else who we know feels connected to us, you know, and that helps us, doesn't it? Yeah. Okay, so it's this ability to open our heart to others, I think, that becomes very valuable. That's what bodhicitta's about. Okay, the time we die, our level of wisdom, you know, whether we're in touch with the nature of reality, that's important when we die, isn't it? Yeah? Whether you know the current stock market rates is not important when you die. Okay? Whether we know the nature of reality or whether we've trained our mind in contemplating impermanence and emptiness and things like that, that's very valuable when we die. So bodhicitta is something that energizes us to do those wisdom contemplations. Okay? So we can see that this attitude of bodhicitta is what makes our life meaningful. And whether we've developed the full bodhicitta to the fullest extent or not is not the issue. Just even having a tinge of bodhicitta in our hearts, you know, even having cultivated it once, you know, even we forget it afterwards, still something has changed inside, and that's become very, very valuable, you know. And imagine when you get to the time of death, if, you know, you can die with a feeling of contentment about your life and a feeling like, you know, I've been so fortunate to hear these teachings on bodhicitta. It's time to leave this life now. I pray in my future life that I'm born in a place and at a time where I can meet somebody who will teach me about bodhicitta, where I can take the bodhisattva vows, where I can continue this practice, you know. And I dedicate all the merit that I've accumulated in my life through the power of this compassionate thought for the benefit of all living beings. I mean, imagine when we die having that kind of thought in the mind. Be nice, wouldn't it? You know, having our mind so well trained in compassion that when we die, you know, there's no regret, there's no fear, there's a feeling of rejoicing, a feeling of fulfillment, a feeling of trust, because especially when we do the bodhicitta meditations and see the kindness of others, we begin to trust them more. We stop being so self-centered and worrying neurotically about ourselves. And so that enables us, when we die, we just let go, go on to the next life. It's not a big sweat. Yeah? Whereas you can see, without bodhicitta, dying is, you know, total chaos, isn't it? It's like, I'm separating from my body. Who am I going to be if I don't have this body? And I'm separating from everybody I love, so who's going to help me? And I'm separating from my whole ego identity, so who am I going to be? And, you know, and my life is so full of regret because all I've done is, you know, I have so many wrecked relationships in the past because I've been so mean to people and angersome with them. And, you know, now all that's weighing on my heart and I'm dying and I can't even apologize. I mean, imagine dying like that. Yuck. You know, really painful. So we can see that just by training our minds in bodhicitta now, we're preparing, you know, we make our own life happy now, and when the time comes to die, no problem, you know. You just let go. And you know, my teacher used to give the example of, like, when a bird is on a ship and it lets, you know, starts to fly, it just takes off and flies over the water. You know, it's not looking back at the ship going, I want that ship, you know, or it just takes off and goes. And so I just think, you know, oh, it'd be so nice when we die, we just do it like that, you know, like no big trip. So what I'm getting at is cultivating this altruistic intention gives that us this ability, you know, to have a meaningful life. And then, you know, to be able to relax at the time of death. So if this is something that's appealing for us, then we should meditate on bodhicitta now. We should try and develop it now. You know, you don't wait until 5 minutes before you die to try and do it. You know, what were those teachings I heard 20 years ago? What was the bodhicitta? What am I supposed to do now? You know? Yeah, okay. So bodhicitta also gives us a feeling of hope and optimism, okay? It's the best antidote to depression and discouragement and despair, which are all pretty rampant emotions in America nowadays. You know, people just get so, you know, you watch the 6 o'clock news and you get filled with despair and you try and do something and you feel discouraged and, you know, it just seems like everything's going wrong, and, you know. And bodhicitta gives us a sense of hope and optimism. Okay? Why? You know, because people ask that. They say, but a bodhisattva has compassion for everybody. That bodhisattva must get so depressed thinking about everybody's suffering. You know? doesn't contemplating everybody's suffering just make you more depressed? You know, I don't want to meditate on bodhicitta. I have enough problem with my own suffering. I don't want to think about others. But, you know, the way in which we think about others' suffering when we're trying to generate bodhicitta is very, very different. Because a bodhisattva has a background of, you know, the three principal aspects of the path. The bodhisattva has the background of the Four Noble Truths. The bodhisattva knows that all phenomena are empty of true existence. Okay? So when you know, at least even on an intellectual level, if you know that everything does not exist in the way it appears, that things lack their own inherent essence, then you see that even suffering lacks an inherent essence. Okay? And you see that sentient beings who are obnoxious lack the inherent essence of being obnoxious. Believe it or not, okay, yeah, the guy that you think is the biggest jerk in the world does not have an inherent essence of jerkness, okay, or obnoxiousness. Yeah, this is just something that we label, you know, according to circumstances, but that's not the essence of the person. And so a bodhisattva, they may see sentient beings suffer, but they know that the suffering comes from causes and that the chief cause is ignorance. And they know that the ignorance can be eliminated by generating this wisdom that realizes the emptiness of inherent essence of phenomena. Okay? So in that way, a bodhisattva sees that suffering is not, you know, predetermined. It's not an inherent given. It's not something that has to happen. You know, it only happens because there's causes and conditions. If we change the causes and conditions, then the suffering doesn't come. If we eliminate the ignorance, which is the root of the suffering's not going to happen. Okay? Okay, so the bodhisattva, you know, because they even, you know, they have even an intellectual, you know, understanding of the nature of reality, they see that there's hope. You know, that even when beings are suffering, those beings can change. Okay, those beings have the Buddha nature. The causes for their suffering can be discontinued. Yeah, and so therefore a bodhisattva has a lot of hope and a lot of optimism. Yeah, and so that for that reason a bodhisattva doesn't get depressed when they think about other people's suffering. You know, they think their suffering is sad and they certainly commiserate, but they don't sit there and get all depressed and feel hopeless about it because they know that there is something that can be done to change the situation, and the bodhisattvas take that responsibility and do something, you know, according to their own ability. Yeah, they don't just sit around and go, "Oh, I'm just a lowly bodhisattva. There's so much suffering. I can't really help. I wish the Buddha would help them more." You know? Yeah, a bodhisattva just takes the challenge and goes out and does it. Okay? Knowing that they're limited, but, you know, some help is better than nothing, isn't it? So they take the challenge and they do it. Okay, so it's, you can see that when we really, you know, think about bodhicitta in this way, we can see why it's said to be the cause of all happiness. You know, because even right now in our own lifetimes, it can totally transform how we look at life. You know, how we look at our experience, how we look at what's going on in the world today. Okay. So, what kind of causes do we need to generate to generate bodhicitta? First, we need to see the benefits, like we've just been talking about last session and this session so far. Second, we need to purify our mind and to accumulate positive potential. And so this is one of the results of doing the recitations before the teachings. The seven-limb prayer, for example, is very good for purifying negative karma and developing positive potential. If you do the Vajrasattva practice, or you do the bows to the 35 Buddhas, you're doing purification. If you practice making offerings, if you have an altar at home, remember a couple of months ago I taught about how to set up the altar and how to make offerings and everything. It's on a tape somewhere in case you don't remember. But if you have an altar and you make offerings at home, you accumulate a lot of positive potential. If you give generously to various charities, you know, not out of obligation, but with a happy heart, you know, then you create a lot of positive potential. So, you know, these kinds of practices to purify the negative attitudes and generate positive ones, they set the stage for generating bodhicitta. You know, because you can see that something noble like bodhicitta to generate it, we have to, you know, get rid of obstacles and cultivate the conducive circumstances. This is how a lot of the other practices we do fit in with this. Yeah, it's quite important. It's very helpful to live near other practitioners who value bodhicitta and who are also practicing to develop it. You know, that becomes a good support for us. Yeah. So that's why, you know, coming to teachings, coming to the center, making friends with each other is something very important, because when you're friends with Dharma people, they understand that part of you and they're going to support it. You know, some of our other friends may not. Yeah. Some of our other friends might say, "You're going to sit on a cushion and meditate on compassion? Why don't you stay home and have compassion for me and we'll go out boating this weekend?" Yeah? Or somebody at work is going to say, "Get a life. What are you going to do a retreat for and sit on a cushion for 2 days? You know? Get a life. Go do something. You can have so much fun." Or they might say, "You're trying to meditate to develop love and compassion for everybody? That's useless. All these people are so obnoxious. Do you really want to love George Bush? Do you really want to love Saddam Hussein? Come on, you know, this is stupid." So, you know, your Dharma friends are not going to say that, I hope. Yeah. I mean, our Dharma friends are going to support, they're going to understand our virtuous wish. They're going to support it. They're going to say, "Oh, yeah, retreat is so useful, you know, and it's so valuable, and you feel so good when you come back, and you get along so much better with your family when you come back." Yeah. Dan's son said Dan's a lot nicer when he comes back. He knows when he wants something. Ask his dad when he comes back from his retreat. It's true, isn't it? You know?
I start cleaning, and my wife is like, "He's back."
You know, there's a guy in our group in Seattle, and his wife is the same way. She doesn't come to the center, but she loves when he goes on retreat because he's so wonderful when he comes back, you know? So, you know, our Dharma friends will really support us when we want to do retreats or we want to go to teachings, because they see the results. It's really sweet. There's one other lady in the group in Seattle, and she has a son who's about 26, 27, and she'd been practicing maybe just for a year or two, not a real long time. And she asked him one day, "You know, do you see a difference since I started practicing?" And he went, "Wow, Mom, you're so much less neurotic." You know, now from a 20-year-old son, that's a real compliment, isn't it? You know? So she was just tickled about that. Okay. So it really, improves the quality of your life, and your Dharma's friends support you in that. You know, and if you're doing bodhicitta meditation and you get stuck somewhere, or you know, you run into a glitch in your practice, or you feel kind of down in the dumps because you thought you would be enlightened by now, you know, your Dharma friends remind you, you know, this is going to take a little while, be patient, you know, and they support you. So living, you know, in contact with other people who are also practicing bodhicitta, you know, having access to books about bodhicitta, having access to teachers who teach bodhicitta, you know, this is another very good supportive condition for developing this art. Okay, so, you know, hearing and studying teachings about bodhicitta, you know, having contact with a teacher, and really, you know, trying to set up a regular daily meditation practice where we, you know, do some purification, some creation of positive potential, where we remember bodhicitta, you know, all the time, that becomes a very good cause for generating it. You know, so that little thing I told you to do in the morning when you wake up, do you remember that? What are the three intentions when you wake up? First one?
Be thankful just to wake up.
Yeah, be thankful just to wake up. Okay. And then on the basis of that?
Well, we're be grateful that we get to hear the teachings.
Yeah.
And also choosing what's important to do that day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we choose what's important to do that day. And what do we come up with? Huh? First thing, what's most important to do every day? Bottom line. Right, as much as possible not to harm anybody. Okay. Second most important thing is to help. Okay, however big or small way, we don't have to be Mother Teresa. You know, we just have to help as much as we can. You know, and third?
What's going to make my life meaningful? Ask yourself, was that part of it?
All these empty pots. Remember bodhicitta, right. Okay, so write these three things down. Put them on a post-it by your nightstand or on the mirror in the bathroom. And on your refrigerator, okay, the three things to remember when you first wake up and as much as possible throughout the day, not to harm anybody as much as possible, to help them as much as you can, and to have this long-range spiritual motivation of bodhicitta, wanting to become a Buddha to benefit everybody, okay? So if, you know, if we try and generate those three things every day and make it a habit, that becomes a very strong cause for actually generating bodhicitta. Because what we're doing is rehabituating our mind with different thoughts. Okay? Because a lot of what we're trying to do in spiritual practice is retrain our mind. Okay? Or reform our mind. Yeah, we're all in reformatory school. Yeah, trying to reform different habits. Yeah, so instead of waking up with the thought of, what do I have to do today? And, you know, is the coffee ready yet? And I want to sleep more. You know, training the mind to wake up with this feeling of purpose and meaning and joy. You know, and then throughout the day, remembering this. Okay, Thich Nhat Hanh has a lovely tradition in his with his students, and every so often, you know, they ring a bell, and then everybody stops what they're doing and breathes three times in silence. You know, now when you're breathing three times in silence, come back to the bodhicitta, come back to these three things of not to harm, to benefit, and to aspire for enlightenment for the benefit of everybody. You know, use that as your trigger to come back to what's important in your life. So you may not have a mindfulness bell around you, but there's stoplights and they can be your trigger. There's the telephone ringing That can be your trigger. One woman told me, she has little kids, she uses mommy. As the trigger for her to come back and remember these three things. Okay? So the more we habituate our mind with this, the more it just, you know, becomes our habit and the different way that we look at other people. Okay? And you can see this, you know, as you get to know people who are practicing, they will often have a different take on other things. You know, we'll go in and look at something and just be, you know, be so discouraged. And they'll go in and look at something and see all the hope and potential. Okay? Or we'll just look and, you know, say, oh, this whole society's going down the tubes, you know. And they will look at it and say, wow, there's, you know, there's some good things happening now and there's some real potential for change here. So, you know, it all depends on how we train our mind, what we look at. Okay? A friend of mine once said, a pickpocket sees pockets. Okay? Now, most of us don't notice people's pockets, do we? Well, maybe some of you do, depending if you... But pickpockets really notice pockets, because those are important. Okay? So if you're a pickpocket, you train yourself to notice everybody's pockets. If you're not a pickpocket, you very seldom notice people's pockets. Okay? So it's just a thing of what we train our mind in. If we're training our mind in bodhicitta, we notice people's goodness. Yeah? If we don't train our mind in bodhicitta, all we do is complain. Yeah? And, you know, the same situation, it's the glass half full and the glass half empty thing, isn't it? Yeah? Okay, so that's a little bit about the benefits of bodhicitta and the causes for bodhicitta. Now, how to develop it. Okay, the actual method.